Good evening. I am Magnus Magnusson, and this is Mastermind. With us we have Tegan Jovanka. Good evening, Miss Jovanka.
Good evening.
Your subject today is bunnies. In the cartoons, which creatures were a favoured hunting target of Elmer Fudd?
Rabbits.
Correct. In Beatrix Potter, which creatures invaded Mr. McGregor's garden?
Rabbits.
Correct. Watership Down centred around which creatures?
Rabbits.
Which Chaz... I've started, so I'll finish. Which Chaz and Dave song...
Rabbits, rabbits, rabbits.
That is incorrect. The song is called Gertcher.
No, oh, rabbits.
No, Gertcher. Miss Jovanka, you scored 3 out of 4 with no passes. Welcome, welcome, welcome to this, the latest in a long line of Staggering Stories podcasts.
So very long.
I'm Fate Keith.
I'm Adam.
I'm Tegan Jovanka.
And I, yes, I am...
I honestly don't know. I've wandered.
Like a cloud.
That's wandered.
My whole identity now has been compromised.
That's good, dear. We have no Jean today and no Crumbly. They've clearly run off together for a love tryst on the little island in the middle of Tilgate Lake, which will come as a big surprise to them because there is no little island in the middle of Tilgate Lake.
I think the swans are going to be a little perturbed.
And the terrapins.
Yes.
Mm. And terrapins can give one a nasty nip.
Mm. Well, indeed.
Someone introduced the news.
Okay. Without further ado, we shall now have the news with El Presidente!
Doctor Who news.
Oh, yeah.
Yay.
Disney out.
Get out.
In a move that likely surprises nobody, Disney have decided to end their deal with the BBC to make Doctor Who. Despite this financial blow, the BBC have made good on their recent mumblings that Doctor Who will continue come what may by announcing a new Christmas special for next year without Disney. Russell T Davies will continue as showrunner for this special and is believed to be taking on writing duties, as is often the way. Bad Wolf Studios will continue as the production company. Speculation is rife that RTD2 might step down after that special to hand over to a new showrunner for whatever season comes after that. Disney have been cowering from the media, but the BBC did say this about the end of the partnership. We'd like to thank Disney Plus for being terrific global partners and collaborators over the past 2 seasons. And for the upcoming The War Between the Land and the Sea, the BBC remains fully committed to Doctor Who, which continues to be one of our most loved dramas. And we are delighted that Russell T Davies has agreed to write us another spectacular Christmas special for 2026. We can assure fans the Doctor is not going anywhere. And we will be announcing plans for the next series in due course, which will ensure the TARDIS remains at the heart of the BBC. Mm. Quite what this means for international distribution is currently very unclear. Income from selling Doctor Who abroad is likely to be vital, but will they look for another streaming partner or go hawking to every individual foreign broadcaster they can find?
Mm.
Dun, dun, dun.
So that's good news, isn't it?
Well,
yeah.
Yes.
In some ways.
In some ways, I don't quite know what happens for everybody outside of the UK.
Do we care?
The important thing is more Doctor Who.
Yes. At least one more, and they are saying there will be more after that.
So do you think Moffat will be the new showrunner?
I doubt.
Are we caught in a chronic hysteresis?
That's it. They're recycling Doctors, so now they're going to recycle all the executive producers.
I think he will have seen what's happened with RTD2 and say, we want a part of that.
Yeah, put a bit of distance.
Are we caught in a chronic hysteresis?
Quite possibly. I seem to remember JMS at one point in time throwing his hat.
Yeah, and, I believe he's still in the country.
J.
Yeah.
Michael Skirinski.
Yeah.
Are we caught in a chronic hysteresis?
You haven't done it in so long.
So what is it?
It's white hole.
So, earlier than expected.
Yeah?
They kept bumping the date back to, on the announcement of it.
Well,
the end of season one, the end of season two, after the special.
I believe that the BBC have preempted Disney.
I don't know. Yeah, maybe.
Also, that just coincidence that Rob Shearman did an interview. His comment was, it's as dead as we've ever known it.
Oh,
not
yeah.
that it's dead. Yeah. But, of course, people started mentioning it in interviews to people at Bad Wolf. And then really quickly after that, the BBC announcement came out. I don't know if they're sort of...
Yeah.
Possible.
Yes, what he was saying is...
Because it was for the monthly, I think.
An interview, because the Booksy's been brought out, like, I've got one right here.
Oh, wow, yeah. Jubilee, the book.
Yes.
The hardback version from Big Finish. Yeah, he was basically saying, we're in this weird state now where we don't have a current doctor, effectively.
Yeah, you can't write anything.
Because we don't really know what Billy Piper is. Is she the doctor?
There was no confirmation with Miss Piper.
Exactly.
We don't think she's the doctor, we've said this before.
Yeah. But either way, even if she is, you don't know anything about her, so you can't write for her doctor.
Mm. No. So it's a bit awkward, isn't it? It leaves you in a kind of limbo.
You should write for the doctor, not for the
actor.
Yeah,
we've had this conversation before about whether they're writing for the doctor or writing for the actor.
But what if... Yeah. They've got the idea of, like, a Patrick Troughton doctor in their head, and she turns out to be a manic depressive along the lines of Eeyore.
we've had that before, because they later on in this segment, they're discussing that they employed Ian Marta for the roughhousing, heavy-handed job, because they didn't know what doctor they were getting.
Yeah.
I suppose, so it's not for the first time that...
And a lot of Peter Capaldi's was just John Pertwee, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Different points.
A bit. So. But even... Let's assume that Billy Piper's doctor, if she is a doctor, is only around for the next special.
Yeah, what would be the point? Having
it carries straight on.
Yeah.
Where's there room for more stories at that point?
Yeah.
They're just trying to scupper a Big Finish.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you couldn't go and write stories for her doctor, even if you want to make her a generic doctor, because there's no way it would fit in.
Yeah, well, all they need to do is put one scene, just one scene, where she nips into the TARDIS and says, I'll be right back, and you could get years of material.
That's what they've done with the Ninth Doctor.
I know. That disappearing and then reappearing
the
in
end
Rose.
Of Rose. Yeah.
Yeah, and Matt Smith was constantly disappearing with River, wasn't he? And there was all sorts of shenanigans going on there that we weren't
excellent
privy
word, shenanigans.
Yeah.
Quite nicely used, I thought, yeah.
I challenge you to use the word kumquat in conversation this evening.
I'll just slip that in. Yeah. Further Doctor Who news.
Oh, yeah.
That's right, we've been saving it all up. Spin-off comes early. With the Disney Doctor Who era effectively over, what is to become of the spin-off, The War Between the Land and the Sea?
Tell us, Scott.
Well, before the announcement that Disney were out, we had most recently been told, expect the decision on the collaboration after the spin-off's release. Mm. Now the decision is public. It appears that Disney are no longer holding the BBC to their 2026 schedule for the 5-episode unit spin-off. Instead, the BBC will both be streaming and broadcasting sometime in December,
woohoo!
With Disney Plus putting it out in 2026, likely to little or no fanfare.
Because we'd have all seen it.
Well, that's everyone would have streamed it by then.
Yeah,
it'll
be on all the torrents.
Yeah. RTD2 has officially said of the lengthily named spin-off, this is huge, spectacular Christmas treat with heroes, monsters... and battles and romance in a world on the edge of disaster. And remember, watch the seas.
And that's marvelous. Just the EastEnders.
Yeah. Watch the seas. He's encouraging people to pirate it, isn't he?
Yeah, exactly.
Is it going to be over the Christmas period then?
I was thinking. Yeah. We don't get a Christmas episode, but maybe, again, they've brought it forward so that it kind of fills that gap so that we have something.
Because do we know how many episodes it's going to be?
Five.
Yeah, they could do that over a whole week, over Christmas.
That'd be great if they did.
Yeah.
We haven't had anything like that since Torchwood, I don't think.
Yeah.
They did it occasionally back in the day, but I think Torchwood, the last time they did anything quite like that.
Yep, that's what they should do.
It makes
decided.
It makes it event TV, doesn't it? And yeah, the Christmas holidays are a good time to do it because everyone's watching a lot more TV. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's odd that they don't seem to be in sync with Disney anymore. Now it's all over. Nobody cares about being in sync.
If I may, I think I'm quoting someone in the fact that it's, screw you guys, I'm going home.
Yeah.
Any more news?
Nabil Shaban.
Dead.
Actor and marsh minnow lover Nabil Shaban has dropped dead, age 72. Shaban is best known to Doctor Who fans for his amazing performance as the Sixth Doctor era villain, Syl.
The best villain.
He was born with brittle bone disease. I'm going to mangle this.
Osteoporosis.
Osteogenesis imperfecta.
Thank you. Which made him wheelchair bound. Despite numerous roles on stage, TV and film, he will be best remembered for creating opportunities for other disabled actors by confronting the Grace Theatre Company in 1980, partly in response to drama schools refusing admission to budding actors based on disability.
Mm. Now, we only reviewed Mindwarp recently, didn't we?
We did, yes.
And I've just finished listening to the Big Finish one as well.
Yes, he did at least one big finish.
And what was the other one? Antidote to Oblivion.
Yeah, yes. That's it.
I think Antidote to Oblivion was a really good one. I did like Mission to Magnus because I hadn't read the book, but it hasn't aged well. It's a bit sexist now.
Oh, really? Okay.
But that's more to do with the writing.
Being that much...
Cop.
Yeah.
That's
the word I was looking for.
I used to love how overexcited Syl got when evil shenanigans was going down.
He'd gurgle and wobble and gyrate.
And shove some more marsh minnows in his mouth.
Because he was quite well known on the convention circus because he did a couple of leisure hives.
Yeah, he did.
But, yeah.
Wow, I never got him to meet person. Him. Yeah. But yeah, he was my favourite. And of course, we saw the mentor costume up in Peterborough as well. And I did watch the first episode of Devil's Seeds of Andor. That's the real-time pictures spin-off. And he's completely in character. He's the best thing about it. So, I've only done the first episode. Apparently it's 4, so I'll let you know how that goes. But, I'll miss him.
Yeah.
Shame, but not bad age, considering. But,
not at all.
Yeah. I'd be lucky if I reached that age.
Oh, indeed,
That's next year.
Thank
you. Any more news?
I have a few.
A few? Okay.
Addendums. Okay. I've been scouring.
Oh, explains the redness.
a couple of podcasts ago, I think I mentioned that Lego was boldly going where no bold man had boldly gone before.
Yes, indeed.
And they have released pickies of the first two sets, which is quite an interesting combination. One, Enterprise D. That's going to be a multiple Legoed piece unit along the lines of the Millennium Falcon and the Death Star.
Okay. Yeah,
a couple of thousand bits to build the Enterprise D.
It should be, isn't it?
On slightly smaller scale, they are also releasing a Type 15 shuttle pod. That's the boxy two-manned shuttlecraft.
Okay, from early next gen.
Yeah, from early next gen, yeah.
Oh.
And I think that
is that the Skin of Evil shuttles?
Yes. No, not the Skin of Evil shuttle.
The one where Picard in the future comes back.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, complete with a figure. I'm not sure what figure it is. It's just a nondescript Starfleet figure.
It could be any figure. When you take its hair off, it's Picard.
Yeah. yep.
What is your second?
It's a, how much money have you got?
£5, 4 shillings and threepence.
Well, yes.
Well, the prop store is auctioning off Boba Fett's blaster.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, the rifle blaster. They estimate it's going to go between $462,000 to
$924,000.
Oh, my God. Best part of $1 million.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it doesn't even really kill people.
No.
But, it's the one used by Jeremy Bullock in 1980, Empire Strikes Back.
Okay.
So it's probably got his DNA on the handle.
Well, he was wearing gloves.
He was. He could have he was wearing a helmet, but I'm sure between breaks, in a coffee break, he may have sneezed on it.
Yeah, he might have itched his nose with the barrel.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, that is a combination of a stock with a standard revolver.
Yeah. Most of the guns in Star Wars are based on
real
weapons.
Yeah.
Essentially, something that Luca could probably throw together at the top of the hat.
Yeah.
Because some of them are pieced together from old BBC props, weren't they?
Well, one of them was a Dalek gun.
Oh, from Death to the Daleks.
Yeah.
That's right.
They took the barrel they built for a Dalek and slapped it on a pistol.
Mm. Any more? One more addendum?
I think that is... Oh, hang on. Oh, no, Star Trek IV. Is dead again.
Okay, yeah.
And that's the end of the news.
Oh, there is one more.
Oh!
June Lockhart.
Dead.
Oh, yes.
Aged 100.
That's okay. A damn good innings.
Yes, not bad.
A whole century.
Yeah, so she obviously played Maureen Robinson in the original Lost in Space.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She appeared in Babylon 5. I remember appearing in Babylon 5.
Yep.
Obviously, Bill Murray was in Babylon 5 too. I think she turned up in the remake of Lost in Space.
Yeah,
briefly.
I think briefly, sort of cameoed in the background.
Not that awful film I made you sit through.
No.
Matt LeBlanc.
Oh, yeah.
You're still not forgiven for that one, boy.
Also, stuff like Bewitched, Voyage to the Bottom of the Sea, Man from U.N.C.L.E.
Yeah,
lots of stuff. But
that we should reach 100.
Yeah.
Is that now the end of the news?
I think that is.
Yay! Yes. That's the end of the news. We've all received our obligatory season 13 box sets. And so we started watching some of the special features, and we particularly focused on a documentary about Ian Marta.
Mm. Oh, yes.
So we want to tell you about it. Pause for music. Come on then, people, talk.
It's about an hour and 10 minutes long.
It's a long documentary.
Quite a big documentary.
And there was more in it than you expected to get. It really went into his private life, so you really got a sense of knowing him. And there were lots of really interesting photos of him growing up and also being on stage for the first time.
Yeah. Mm.
And I didn't know he obviously had a difficult relationship with his dad, and his younger brother was let off lightly because he was the younger one. But
didn't his younger brother look like Derek Jacobi?
He did. I was surprised how young everyone looked. For some reason, I thought they were all going to look older.
Well, to my mind, his son looked very old.
Yeah.
You know? But he's a full-grown man.
Even down to family, I was unaware he had children or he'd been married or everything. And I didn't know that he was struggling with his sexuality. That had never come up before at all. So I really felt for him.
I did know that. I think, I don't know where I saw it, but I did see it mentioned, but only once in my entire life of reading or watching and listening to about Ian Marta. It was only referred to once. This is the second time I've heard it.
He was a dashing young chap, wasn't
he? He was. Yeah. And he was genuinely that lovely, wasn't he? He was basically Harry Sullivan all
over. Oh, he was wonderful. We met him at several conventions not long before he died.
Yeah.
And he was just such an accommodating, funny guy.
Again, back to the Leisure Hives. He did a couple of those. And I do remember they used to do a cabaret in the evening. And it was him and Nicholas Courtney.
There was a one-eyed yellow idol north of Kathmandu something.
Yeah, and also being the Brigadier and Harry, but not recognising each other.
Yeah, it was really...
One particular line that sticks in my mind is, he said, "Never mind, old thing, we can always go, I am not old, I am not a thing." Do you know, my wife used to say that as well.
I think that the documentary sort of enlightens me on why he suddenly wasn't in Doctor Who, because it felt like the strongest TARDIS team, didn't it?
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden he was gone. And then it didn't feel right when he was back in Android Invasion playing a bad version of himself. And
it's annoying that they didn't realise how good a team they had.
Yeah.
And even if he wasn't able to do what they had originally hired him to do, just keep him, because Harry was wonderful.
The interaction between Harry and Sarah,
it was...
Yeah, your ankles or fetlocks are like a horse.
Yeah, yeah.
They were very much like brother and sister.
Yeah.
There was so much bickering.
Yeah.
And I think a few years ago, I started collecting the Mythmaker DVDs when they were releasing all the interviews. And I'd seen Ian Marta's one. I had no idea that he filmed it and then passed away a couple of weeks later.
It was him and Nicholas Briggs, wasn't it? Very young Nicholas Briggs.
A very young with hair. on his head rather than his face.
But I have to say, I've been doing the Target novelisation audiobooks now for quite a few years, and his have always been my favourite. Mm. Right. Just the way he elaborates on language and really sort of puts, I mean, like they said in the documentary, the gore and the violence into it for to make it more realistic.
Yes.
Harry Sullivan's War was excellent, and the narrator, or whoever it was who said it was correct, that when New Adventures came along, he'd have been, there. Yes. He'd have been one of the top producers.
He would have fitted in well in that range, wouldn't he? Because that was all a bit more grown up.
Yeah, it's interesting, in the documentary they're saying how he'd be at his typewriter, almost in his dressing room during the day, and then in the evening he'd be on stage performing. Busy.
Because he was slowly sliding into authorship.
Yes. Yeah.
Becoming more and more a central theme of his life.
I remember with the first Doctor story, The Rescue, obviously that was only two episodes, and they tend to flesh it out. Yeah. And Ian Martyr had that job with The Rescue, but he passed away midway through.
Yeah.
And it was picked up by, I think, Nigel Robinson, and there's a forward in there just explaining what had happened. Yeah. But they still managed to do a good job with it.
Earthshock is one of that Ian Martyr wrote, is one of my favourite Target novelisations.
And he's perfect for that, isn't he?
Oh, just a touch.
But what I didn't realise is that he was, not only did he do Who books, but he did film books.
Yeah,
but
under a pen name.
Under a
pen
name.
Flash of all things. Yeah. I can remember that.
Film tie-ins.
You have to track them down, don't we?
Yeah.
Because that was a thing in the 80s.
Yes.
Because somewhere at home, I've got the novelisation of Grease.
Really?
It's actually really interesting.
Do they sing it?
Yeah.
I think it's basically insert song here in your head. But no, it's a proper story. It's,
I did love that sort of last piece of TV, that advert he was on for Philips Gadgets. He's literally enjoying like a razor and a coffee maker.
He was in a lighthouse, wasn't he?
Yeah. Which he fits, being a sailor.
Yeah.
Ooh, yeah.
But there was a certain look for him. If it had been the 40s or the 50s, it would have been a matinee idol.
Yeah.
You know, Let's face it, has that.
If he had been grown up during the Second World War, he'd have been a perfect ship captain.
Yeah.
Because
he's
just had something about him.
Yeah.
There was one, we spoke about it quite a lot afterwards, didn't we?
We discussed this.
He didn't control his diabetes.
No.
And watching it and having met the guy and knowing how good he was, I found myself getting angry with him that he didn't control something that he'd had since birth.
Yeah.
It's not as if it was type 2 and he was just learning. He had to control this since he was a boy, and he just didn't. Mm. And there was so much more he had to offer. And I got genuinely cross with him.
Yeah, because I felt that
had happened
too. You feel very frustrated because there's a sense of inevitability in the documentary, isn't there?
Yeah.
Because
it's not
just type 1 diabetes. It's brittle diabetes.
Yeah. If anything, it's sort of type a half. It's the most...
It's the worst.
Worst variation of it you could get.
But he sort of looked at it that it didn't belong to him. It wasn't really his.
It's the ostrich. It's the burying your head in the sand or just thinking, what's going to happen?
Not trying to defend him, but as I said to you, you take more care of other people than you do yourself.
Mm.
Because you've got it. And certainly if you've got it from birth, you've always had it.
Yeah,
it's part of the background. It's natural. You can pay it no mind.
Yeah,
I know he couldn't.
To pay it mind.
Yeah, I know that. But it's a case of, all right, we'll deal with that in a minute. But I've got to deal with you first because you're obviously ill. You care more for or put more effort into other people than you do for yourself.
Mm. There was a very strict regime, wasn't there? So two jabs a day, one in the morning, one in the evening. Eat so long after this jab and things like that. So I imagine it was hard.
Yeah. Personally, I understand where you're coming from, and I'm not trying to justify what happened to him, but I can understand.
Yeah.
You know, you put that off and then accidentally fall into a coma.
On his 42nd birthday.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's younger than all of us. He was younger than all of us then.
Yeah, it seems hard to believe, isn't it?
Yeah.
Even now, when I look at him, somehow he feels like he's older than I am.
Yeah.
He really wasn't.
No. Just the way he carries himself.
Yeah.
And it happened at the worst possible time, didn't it? Because him and his son had some some sort of disagreement. Yeah. It wasn't the worst, but on his birthday, son's birthday, when he went to sort it out, and that's when they found him.
Yeah, they weren't talking, so, you know, it was obviously a small snit that blew up.
Yeah.
But I do feel quite warm that we were allowed into the kind of family life and the private Ian Marta as well.
His wife just fray open, wasn't she?
Certainly a lot of those photographs, you got the impression they were from albums, from family albums.
Oh, yes.
And it's possibly the most in-depth documentary I've seen for any person in Doctor Who. It was really good.
What was his wife's name? It was something funny. It was Miffy or...
Mimsy.
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 Yeah. It's more of a nickname.
But all fantastic. Mimsy Marta. Brilliant name.
Yeah.
It was good to see some footage of interviews with Liz Sladen as well.
Yeah.
And also Tom.
Yes. And also you had some convention footage.
Yeah. I was really hoping it would have been a Leisure Hive, but it wasn't. It was TARDIS Con 85 or something.
But his first acting debut.
And he was very funny on stage, wasn't he? Why did you leave? Well, I was sacked.
Yeah.
Honest.
Yeah. An actor's life, unfortunately. If the character's not required, then
off you go.
Yeah, into it,
But the thing is, it wasn't have been a surprise because they'd only had him on for, one season?
One season.
Yeah.
That's probably all he was contracted for. We'll see how you do.
But stupidly, they didn't look to extend it.
Yeah.
But at least he kept up with Doctor. He wasn't
bitter.
Wasn't bitter about it. He didn't turn his back on Doctor.
No.
Obviously, he didn't come back onto screen, but he did do all the Target books. He'd go to conventions.
Yeah, he was really still connected. There wasn't a grudge there.
He clearly really enjoyed his time on it.
And he gained a really good reputation as well as a writer.
Yes. It would have been good to see. Yeah, you know, apart from Harry Sullivan's War is one thing, but that's still Doctor Who.
Yeah.
It would have been good to see him produce his own stuff.
Yeah.
Just to see what he would have come up with. Mm. It would have been gory. There would have probably been sex in it. This is why he would have been so good at the new adventures.
Yeah, Marta Unleashed.
Oh, boy.
Now, according to Wikipedia, he did the first four Disney Gummy Bears books.
Oh, bless him. As Ian Marta or as Ian, what was the other, Ian Dan?
Doesn't say. That says book one, Disney's Gummy Bears, Zummy Makes It Hot.
See, now, I did watch The Gummy Bears, and I do remember the book range. I don't remember them being particularly chunky or violent, but I do.
No, Zummy Makes It Hot. It sounds like he's gone to town on that one.
Gummy in a gilded cage.
Oh, dear.
The Secret of the Juice.
Oh, my word.
And Light Makes Right.
I think he probably had to tone his natural style down, but it found its way into the titles.
I cannot believe we've just done smirky, childish snorting over Gummy Bears books.
Well, we should eBay these books and see.
Yeah, we
The Secret of the Juice. Oh, lordy lord. But yeah, it was a cracking documentary. Very, very good. Lots of nostalgia.
It was quite long, wasn't it? It was an hour and a half. It was really in depth. He was really well covered and represented.
I was trying to figure out who the first companion we lost, the actor.
Oh.
Who would that have been? Would that be Michael Craze?
Did Ian Marta go before Michael Craze?
He did, yeah, because Ian Marta was 86. And Michael Craze, funnily enough, we were going to do a wine and dine event in Crawley.
Yeah.
And he cancelled that morning. So we rang Elizabeth Sladen. She got John Leeson to come down. Michael Craze then apologised, said he'd be down for the next one, and then he died that morning.
Oh, no!
Yeah.
And he was like, to get out of dinner with Scott.
Is it just Crawley?
It's just, yeah. Because Ben Jackson was one of my first crushes, so I was devastated.
I love the casual, and he couldn't do it, so we rang Elizabeth Sladen.
Jacqueline Hill died in...
was that the 80s? Late 80s?
Yeah, because she was in...
Megloss.
Yeah.
93, so yeah.
Wow. 93.
Okay. As late as that, yeah.
And then there would have been... Well, there was Mary Tam.
Watling.
Deborah Watling was quite recently.
Mary Tam was relatively recent because she appeared in... No, it's 20 years. She appeared in a couple of big finishes.
Considering how far back the series goes, they're actually... quite a long-lived bunch.
Mm. Yeah.
Yes.
Because I know Jacqueline Hill and William Russell have gone, but Carol Ann Ford is no spring chicken.
No.
Okay. So if you have season 13... box set, dig out the Ian Marta documentary and the special features, because it's really, really interesting.
One of the best documentaries.
I would also give a shout out for the Matthew Sweet interview with Kate Androzani director.
Graham Harper.
Yeah, that was really good too.
And the Behind the Sofa was a particularly good episode.
And also I would like to point out the Dalek advert for Weetabix.
Weetabix.
Which we picked up, which I have vague memories of.
And if you put it in a computer, they've got the PDF so you can print out a copy of the Weetabix cutout.
Excellent.
And the Generation Game with the Cybermen on the Enterprise.
And the Cyberman had the trousers on backwards. That was definitely his bum that had I'm a Cyberman written on it.
It was an invasion-style Cyberman. Mm-hmm. And yes, it was...
I also watched The Escape Room, which I haven't been a great fan of, but this one was actually not too bad.
What's The Escape Room?
It's the Doctor Escape Room. So three Doctor actors having to do a Doctor-themed escape room.
Okay.
This time you had Toby Haydoke, you had Matthew Waterhouse and Michael E. Bryant.
Oh, okay.
So I'll have to watch that one then.
And when you've watched all this, write to us and tell us what you thought about it via show
at
staggeringstories.net.
Ooh.
Now, one person, speaking of Ian Marta,
right?
One person, if you can call them that, who never actually met him was...
him.
To be honest, he did meet him once on a ship in Carnival of Monsters.
He did, didn't he?
Yeah.
Perhaps he'll tell us about it. One, two, three.
Hello,
Terence. Hello, Dazilla, the mighty. Yes.
He's down there.
Down there, he's moved.
He's with the goats.
Weeping angel.
Oh, he's with the goats.
Yes.
And Sandy.
Dangerous Churchill, Nazi Spock.
And can we just send all our love to Elizabeth?
Oh, yes.
It's the third anniversary
yesterday.
Of when we lost Dave.
Yes, 3 years.
I can see Clara's face.
Oh, dear, I'm sorry about that.
Don't forget Fluffy Cat.
Fluffy Cat?
Evil Cat.
In the bookcase, Evil Fluffy Cat.
Evil Fluffy Cat. Oh, that's better. Now it's like a silence.
What does?
If only we could all forget Clara like that.
Clara was wonderful.
Dear.
One of the best companion deaths ever, briefly.
Didn't stay dead though, did she?
Well, they don't tend to when Moffat and that write them, do they?
No, it didn't.
Can't do
some
a decent
sulking.
Adric on them, can we? Or even more decent Sarah Kingdom. Now, when she was dead, she stayed dead.
Yeah.
Speaking of death.
Right.
Oh, nice segue.
Thank
there.
You.
Nice segue.
Undeath.
Undeath, and the thing we've watched was from the 90s, which was really a long time ago, apparently.
Dead to us now.
It is. Mm. We have been watching from the dim and distant past, the years where Bros and Oasis ruled the charts, where Liverpool couldn't kick a football for love nor money, when Sir Alex Ferguson was leading Manchester United to string after string of bloody annoying victories. And when Doctor Who wasn't really on telly much at all.
The wilderness years.
We watched Ultraviolet. Pause for music.
'98, Channel 4, six-part series.
45-minute episodes.
Well, about 50-odd minutes, yeah.
50. Took me a while to work it out.
Okay.
They're twice as long as I thought. That's why they're taking longer.
Two times 25.
Tiny, whiny thing, isn't it? This is the best vampire series that never actually mentions vampires.
No, although I did notice on one of the end credits, one of the characters was credited as Vampire Girl.
You slipped up there.
Yeah. It was very subtle, wasn't it? If it wasn't for that the beginning titles with some bite marks in it.
You wouldn't realise what was going on.
It's that first episode, I was like, I kind of get it. Someone's got shot. Yeah.
Basically, you've got... They're not really cops.
No.
There's a trio, including a very young Idris Elba.
Yes.
And a very young Jack Davenport.
Yep.
And a very young Susanna Harker.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
They basically investigate what they call leeches or...
Code Fives.
Code Fives. Yeah. there's basically out there, there's vampires. And along comes very young Jack Davenport, looking not at all like Commander Norrington from Pirates of the Caribbean. Yeah. He is a copper,
mm-hmm.
and he's drawn into their ranks
yes.
to help solve a mystery involving one of his friends. Dun, dun, dun.
Mm.
This I was very impressed with, not only because I found it absolutely fascinating, but it blurred the lines between
oh, yeah.
who was good and who was bad.
Yeah, it did, yeah.
I think Davenport's character was good and was trying to be good, but he's about the only one.
Mm. Yeah.
He must have been fresh off the set of This Life
yeah,
at this point.
I think this is his second major starring role.
He really makes it feel like the 90s, doesn't he? There's no way around it.
Who else played That's Not There Anymore? And who saw the Millennium Dome being built?
Yes.
yeah. Yeah.
I was trying to read all the license plates on the cars
yeah.
and noticing people smoking indoors.
Oh, yeah. And Joe Ahern wrote and directed the
really?
Entire series.
Yeah, yeah. So I went in not knowing that. And strange enough, I'm holding the DVD, which belongs to you, I presume, Adam.
Yeah, indeed.
I own this DVD, and yet apparently I never watched it.
Okay.
It's in the loft, so it was actually the first time going through it. So I was really chuffed to see all of these really familiar faces, including Susanna Harker before she did Sapphire and yes. Steel with Big
yeah.
Finish.
Yes, yes, although after she'd done House of Cards, which really made her name.
Yeah. Ah, yes. Yeah, and yeah, but Idris Elba, that was a bit of size.
I've got to say, he discovered his look fairly early on.
He really did.
Shirt, tie, yeah. big rain mac.
He definitely is a vampire because he won't
age.
5 o'clock
shadow.
Yeah.
28 odd years ago, something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. He only had the third billing.
Yeah.
Before The Wire.
Yeah. You could definitely feel it was directed by Joe Ahern, couldn't you? A lot of it sort of synced into place once I knew it was him, because I think I missed it for the first 2 episodes.
Okay.
By the third one, I was like, oh, I get the lighting cues now. I get these camera
the
angles.
First two
it's
episodes
like
I
parting
found,
of the ways.
Found harder mm. going.
Yeah,
but
I was going to say.
From episode 3 onwards, it just shot through.
As I said, you were intrigued by episode 1.
Mm. Fell not, asleep in episode 2.
Not yeah, so much by episode 2.
I would agree with that, but I think my favourite was episode 3 because it really played with a lot of emotion and
yeah.
I was really invested on all the characters, all the main ones that were recurring, but mm. then some of the side characters as well, I was really feeling for them. So yeah, I don't think anything beats episode 3 for me.
It's not a series I can say I enjoyed.
Okay.
It got certainly dark and murky with some of the subject matter.
Mm. Yeah.
But a lot of it is obviously shot at night for obvious reasons.
That's not what I mean.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, it was trying to be real world
yes.
with
yeah.
vampires.
Yeah.
Even though the science doesn't really stack up.
No.
Yeah.
They tried to pretend it did.
Again, it works within the framework yeah. of the show.
But
it may not work in reality.
Susanna Harker's character.
Doctor, yeah, she's a medical doctor.
Dr. March, was it?
Think
yeah,
so,
Angie.
Yeah.
You always felt something was slightly off kilter about her. But then it's when there was an episode where a woman was pregnant
that's
with
third
what
one.
She,
yeah.
that
yeah.
was the third
best,
one, yeah.
The best one for me, yeah.
She's pregnant, there's an amniotic sac in there, but there's nothing in the sac. Because she's pregnant with a baby vampire.
It doesn't pick up on the electronics.
And, well, of
because,
course, yeah.
because of plot line.
And there was just yeah. a throwaway line that Dr. March would like to have the baby on her table in the laboratory so she could cut it up.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's even if it's got vampire blood, it's a baby.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
she would not give it a second thought.
Yeah, she comes across very gentle, but then she threatens another doctor, doesn't she?
Oh,
goes,
yeah.
I'll have you
yeah.
struck yeah. off, it, you know, it, straight
it,
away.
The best way to describe her is a still fist in a velvet glove.
Yeah,
yeah. And it's her eyes. She's Derek Jacobi does it, and
yeah.
she does it. She can go, well, like when she was talking to that doctor,
yeah.
and it was all professional and calm and quite kind eyes. And then when she had to threaten to have her cut off,
yeah.
the eyes just blanked.
She just shuts
she
down.
Just, yeah.
yeah
and she was still smiling.
She still says it very calmly,
she
doesn't
does.
She?
I'd have to have you struck off.
Yeah.
yeah.
I was waiting for her at some point to go, steal.
yeah. Also, I like the fact that she seems to just take charge. In theory, their boss, the priest
yeah.
guy,
yeah.
Pierce
yeah.
Harmon, even there, she was taking charge
yeah.
of him a lot of the time.
Yeah, mm-hmm. especially
telling
once she realised he was ill. Yeah.
yeah.
Well, to a certain extent, that was the Hippocratic Oath doctor taking over.
Yeah. yeah.
And I realised, I think, by episode 2, why they called it ultraviolet, because of all the lighting in the basement of the lab where they're keeping all
yeah.
the samples
yeah.
of
yeah.
the dead vampires.
Ultraviolet
oh, okay.
light kills vampires.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that part of
sunlight.
sunlight.
Yeah, sunlight, yeah.
But I did like the secure room where they keep them all in little tubes in the vaults.
Yeah.
But considering it's nitrous oxide, I think it is.
Ew.
No, nitrogen, liquid nitrogen.
Liquid nitrogen, okay. Yeah.
They pulled one of the tubes out, having been immersed in liquid nitrogen, then just held onto the metal and... really not quite sure that was a good idea.
And then in another scene, someone gets it in the face,
yeah,
don't they?
Gets, yeah, gets splashed with the liquid, yeah, nitrogen, yeah.
Yes.
One thing I did like is you didn't see a big bad until the penultimate episode.
Yeah.
You knew it must be there somewhere, yeah, but... No, it was the story held itself together without needing a boogeyman in the, yeah, corner.
Yeah, the vampires were a shadowy subculture, yeah, doing, yeah, things, manipulating people.
Because there's only a couple of times we get, and the vampires we do get are very low grade, recently, yeah, turned.
Yeah, like Jack's friend.
Yeah,
Jack.
Yeah.
The friend of Jack.
The guy called Jack, who was the friend of the actors.
Yeah. Yeah.
Called Jack. And the journalist.
Yes, and the journalist, yeah. Yeah, talking about, we had the ex fiance of this Jack character who had been turned in the first episode,
yeah, yeah,
trying to figure out what's going on.
Yeah.
Trying to get at Jack Davenport's characters.
Inadvertently exposing what was going on.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, Michael. Michael Caulfield, yeah, apparently. Yeah. Interesting. Kept him grounded in that way. He had, yeah, two strands.
Yeah.
I also liked you discover that they're trying to create artificial bloods,
mm-hmm,
and you're trying to work it out in your head whether or not the normal, for want of a better word, humans are the bad guys,
yeah,
or the vampires are the bad guys. Sorry, the leeches are the bad, yeah, guys. And it kind of keeps you guessing right to the end.
Yeah, I mean, it does. It's, the line changes on, mm, who's the good guy and who's the bad, yeah, guy.
That's what I liked about it. There was no perfect people here. Yeah. It was all just people.
As I said, the only one you could point to as being permanently good is Mike, the cop. But he was in bad circumstances, yeah,
he was a newbie.
Yeah.
The, yeah,
three there before him,
yeah,
were very much anti-vampire.
Well, there was the interrogation scene with the guy in the flat.
Oh, the paedophile.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, to which you got...
Idris Elba's beating the crap out of him.
You got Mike, the Jack Davenport character, sitting there trying to reason with him.
Yeah.
And then halfway through, Idris Elba's character goes, right, lumps him, starts
He's always been
him,
able to punch a nonce really well.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I love the gadget they use on their gun. They put a little mirror type.
Yeah, yeah.
And did you notice, whenever they're out there, you've got your gun in the holster,
mm-hmm,
but they manage to pull out this big clunky mirror thingy to, yeah, put on the end of the gun, and it somehow hadn't been interfering with the lining of their coats.
Magic pockets.
Yeah.
Magic pockets. It's, yeah, Mary Poppins syndrome all over again.
It is indeed. But I did like the possible logical extension of the vampire limitations, i.e. cast no reflection. So, yeah, therefore, you can't hear it on audio.
Yeah,
you
that can't, was good. Yes. Down a telephone. Television.
Yeah, down a telephone. On telly.
Yeah, because CCTV.
There's that interesting scene, isn't there, the first episode, that running through the London Underground, and, like, yeah, the vampire's literally standing in front of him, but because he's looking at the mirror in the corner, he can't see him.
See,
yeah. He's right
and
there!
He's literally just around the corner.
Yeah.
I actually had a false memory of that. I haven't seen this in probably 20 years,
yeah,
whenever I first got the DVD. I had a false memory of that underground scene where the vampire stripped off and left their clothes in a pile. Because their clothes can still be seen.
Yeah,
actually, that's not.
No,
which doesn't actually make any sense.
But another, talking about Michael being just a genuine good guy,
or trying to be,
the one with the kiddie fiddler. They're in the flats and searching around, and another one brings a boy into the flat.
Yeah.
Or it turns out he was bought himself. But Idris Elba was watching a videotape, which of course was showing an empty room.
Yeah.
And Michael looked at the screen, saw that there was nothing on it, thought it was just a camera view of the room,
mm,
and went in guns blazing and put three bullets in the guy.
Yeah.
Mm. And even though the guy he shot was the most vile of human beings possible, he still saved his life,
yeah,
or tried to save his life.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think he did survive. Yeah. He was left at the hospital, wasn't he?
Yeah.
It turns out the kid was
the
leech. Yeah.
Yeah.
The leechies didn't like the way humanity was going,
yeah,
you know, global warming, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they felt the need to
step in and
try to
secure their food supply.
Indeed. Whether that be artificial or just make sure humanity improved its ways.
Well, as was one of the lines, you know, your children will be in battery farms.
Mm. Yeah.
So why didn't it get picked up after this?
Not quite sure.
Because it definitely, like it felt like it was leading into another.
As I said, if anything, it ends slightly disappointingly for, to my mind, but that's because they obviously thought they were getting another season, which it didn't get.
No, they've done a lot of world building, haven't they?
Really created
a good base for it.
It's a slow burner, to my mind. You know, it doesn't go straight into the action, but it's intriguing enough to keep pulling you back in.
Yeah. And I think it was Channel 4, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Towards the end of the 90s and the early 2000s, they were doing sort of four later and really branching out and experimenting with their TV programmes.
As I said, it was fascinating. Those scenes with the Millennium Dome in the background, scaffolding up.
Piece of history there.
Still there now.
It is. But the next time we saw it with big holes in it like that was after that storm. Okay, so that's Ultraviolet. You can buy it on DVD. You can watch it on YouTube. You can watch it on the Channel 4 app. It's really worth a look. I know we've just spoiled it completely for you, but give it a go anyway. And then write to us and tell us what you thought via show
at
staggeringstories.net.
Woohoo! Someone else has been watching Ultraviolet, I hope, and also the Ian Martyr documentary.
Oh, maybe.
He's over in
Crumbly's Corner!
What's the daft old bugger got to say now?
Hello, Crumbly here.
Hi, Crumbly.
Sorry I'm not tonight's podcast, but I'm currently down in Hampshire having some quality time with fake Crumbly. But I would like to, once more, share my thoughts and opinions with you all about what is being discussed here tonight. First up is Ultraviolet.
Oh, yeah.
I remember seeing this when it was first broadcast in 1998.
Yeah.
In a nutshell, it deals with a policeman who stumbles across and is recruited by a covert government agency which deals with the hunting down and eradication of vampires. However, the V word is deliberately omitted from the series, so they are known as either leeches or Class 5s. I suppose this is to sort of dispel any preconceived ideas about sort of bats and frilly shirts and capes and virgins with heaving bosoms, I suppose. Nope, these are undead, are into a technology, science, extortion on human subjects. And, I suppose, you know, in order to achieve their goals, they've also had centuries upon centuries to accrue wealth. And this is to aid them in their pursuit of their goals. Some things, you know, sort of never buck the trend, though, and they are very plausible and convincing whenever they deal with humans, if they want to, and either to sort of recruit human sort of helpers or to just have a quick bite to eat, I suppose. There is a modicum of gallows humour in it, and the interplay, you know, between the various personalities of the team, the developing relationship between the main protagonist, you know, played by Jack Davenport, and his colleague, played by Idris Elba, is interesting to watch as the series unfolds. Another face that turns up later in the series is that of Corin Redgrave, brother of the actress and left-wing firebrand Vanessa Redgrave. I remember seeing Corin, I think this was back in the late 1970s, in, of all things, a party political broadcast for the Workers' Revolutionary Party.
Wow, it's very specific.
Which I found absolutely hilarious when I watched it at the time.
Okay.
In summing up, throw away any traditional and preconceived ideas about Van Helsing-style vampire hunters. High-tech, well, for 1998, is predominant here. And, this is what makes Ultraviolet a highly enjoyable series to watch. Now, when you mention duffel coats, the well-meaning but rather dim Harry Sullivan springs to mind. However, after watching the documentary about Ian Martyr, who played Harry, on the latest Tom Baker Doctor Who Blu-ray box set, I was very pleasantly surprised by the layers and depths to Ian Martyr. There were numerous revelations about him. Firstly, the fact that he spent most of his childhood in Penge and Beckenham, which was only a stone's throw from me where I used to live in Upper Norwood in South London. Also, the fact that his father was a very cold and distant man, and sort of faintly disapproving of him and his sort of brother. Yeah, for sort of no discernible reason, you know, I found. I mean, obviously, this left a big mark on him and instilled in him a sense of sort of wanting to sort of strive in order to sort of impress, you know, sort of After the usual sperm repertory, he got the role that everybody knows him for in Doctor Who. Dotted throughout this documentary were anecdotes and reminiscences from those closest to him. What came as a surprise, and surprised me, was his battle with diabetes and the fact that he was struggling to come to terms with his sexuality for many years. On a lighter note, there was a snippet from the notorious 1986 Mythmakers episode, which had him being interviewed in various pastoral locations, Cromer, by a rather hirsute Nick Briggs. All the time they're being pursued through these locations by Zygon. This documentary it covered many other things. The fact that Ian was responsible for writing many of the target Doctor Who novelisations.
Indeed.
Which I always thought was a rather exclusive domain of Terence Dix and a few select others. And most importantly and tragically, the fact that Ian Marta passed away when he was only in his early 40s. All in all, this proved a very fascinating insight into one of the Doctor's most notable companions. Anyway, I've waffled on for far too long. I should be back in the studio for the next podcast. So until then, this is me, Crumbly, saying be seeing you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Crumbly.
Thanks, Crumbly.
Come to think of it, actually, we were watching, when I was watching that Ian Marta DVD, I did chuckle every time it cut to a picture of Ian's father. He was just wearing a pair of swimming trunks, sunbathing all the time. It's like he never wore clothes.
So that brings us to the end of another podcast. But fear not, next time there'll be more of the same. More fun, frivolity and jollity, more news and reviews, more who old and new. So until that...
Arthur Rabbits?
Rampaging, rambunctious...
Ravenous?
Rabbit comes...
Rollicking?
Raving?
Rogering?
Towards us. This is me, Fake Keith, saying farewell.
Goodbye.
Good night.
They will not... calm down. They will, in fact, calm up.
You have been listening to the Staggering Stories podcast, Series 1, number 484, featuring Adam Purcell, Fake Keith, Asda Man, and the real Keith Dunn. The views expressed here are the speakers and don't necessarily represent those of the other speakers or the site. No copyright infringement is intended, and this has been an El Presidente and Fake Keith production for www.staggeringstories.net.
I just have a water, please. Water. I don't trust gummy bears.
It was Magnus Magnusson, wasn't it?
It was, yeah.
Except on the board game, it definitely wasn't there.
No,
it was some other guy
and some weird woman with him all the time.
Staring down at
you. The front camera.
And it was a really boring game.
It was, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It was almost, it was worse than Battleships.
Battleships was awesome.
Yeah. But I loved Battleships, but it was sort of the same sort of thing. It felt like it was going in that direction. Like
yeah, but it was so dull.
They recreated that front cover, didn't they, a few years back?
Oh, did they?
They got the original
two
of them back. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and they did that
Jesus,
pose.
They must be like 100 years old.
Yeah, they're certainly well into their retirement.
And wheeled him in. That's more interesting than the actual game. So,
tap. Oh, yes.
How's that? Have I better now?
Yep. I don't know why that one always seems a bit quiet. It's a bit quiet because Gene as well.
Gene's worn it out. Are we recording?
We are recording.
Definitely.
Definitely.
So does
it think she knows.
If I can hear it, does it pick up that clock ticking?
It never does. I don't know why.
Seems to hear everything else. I know.
It's that clock there, so it's...
Oh, okay.
I think it's behind all the mics, so it doesn't really get picked up.
Because it picked up someone swallowing, didn't it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
What the hell were you doing that to?
Wouldn't you like to know?
Now the decision is public, and it appears that Disney are no longer holding the BBC to their words. No, I've made that up.
Emil's died. Oh, Tom Baker. Dead.
One day it will be true, and you will cry.
Will it?
What should we do first?
Burp.
Okay.